This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. One of the most pressing concerns for many of us in this area after Hurricane Irma's graceless exit is that loss of power. Hundreds of thousands of people are without electricity just in Southwest Florida. The two big power players here in Florida are Florida Power and Light and Lee County Electrical Cooperative. First, Bill Orla from FPL joins us. Bill, what is the current situation?
Currently in Lee County, we have 259,900 customers that we serve. Out of those customers, 228,450 are still without power. However, during the storm and after, we were able to restore power to 31,450 customers. I know that's not a lot of consolation to the other customers in Lee County that don't have power, but they should know that we have one of the largest workforces ever put together in U.S. history to restore power to our customers. We have nearly 18,000 workers that are fanned out all across the state in the 35 counties we serve, and they're not going to stop until all the lights are back on for our customers.
So that's in Lee County. Do you have any numbers on Collier County?
Yeah, I can give you for Collier County as well, if you bear with me.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I know that they were waiting because I know Marco Island doesn't have any power, and there are a lot of places in Collier that were hit pretty hard.
Yeah, in Collier County, we have 210,700 customers. And when I mean customer accounts, that's meters, not people. Right now, we have more than 200,000, almost 201,000 outages there. We were able to restore 9,800 customers at this time.
So it's kind of about 90% offline right now?
That's correct. Maybe a little more than that.
Okay. And then other parts, Hendry and Charlotte County, were they affected pretty much by the power outages as well because of this wind?
Yeah, Charlotte County, we have 114,100 customers. In terms of those customers right now, we have a little over 68,000 that are out without power. We were able to restore power to almost 46,000. And then in Hendry County, you said, right now all customers that we have in Hendry County, which is 9,700, they are without power.
Oh, okay, they are also without power. So did any of your large power plants have any damage, or are we looking at medium or small repairs on down the line?
Well, it's not so much the power plants that are the issue, it's the infrastructure. And we had said last week before the storm made landfall that in some parts of our service area, we believe that this will not be just a restoration process of days. It could be possibly a restoration of weeks. And I know that's not good news for our customers in the southwest part of the state. We ask them to be patient. We want them to know that there is a workforce that is already on the ground making those repairs to get people on safely and as quickly as possible. In tandem with that, we're also assessing the damage, and within the next couple of days, we should be able to report to the media and our customers what the damage is and when we believe we will get all customers restored.
And it's kind of hard to get a timeline together when you're not sure exactly what's been damaged and to what extent. Do you want people to call in when they see power lines that are tangled up with trees or limbs or branches?
Certainly, they should call 911 first, especially if they see a line sparking or live. And then they can also call us at 1-800-4 and outage, O-U-T-A-G-E.
Okay. As I wanted to ask also, how much did going underground with electrical lines help in this hurricane versus before with Hurricane Andrew 25 years ago? I know that there were a lot of changes made to the way electricity was delivered in Florida.
Well, undergrounding is not necessarily totally the answer. There are pros and cons to undergrounding. Overhead lines obviously are susceptible to wind debris, palm fronds, tree branches, which could cause outages and also bring down infrastructure. But on the opposite side, if you have an underground system and there are outages with that, we're not able to restore power until the water recedes because electricity and water don't mix. It also may take some time to determine where the outage is if the line is underground.
Can you tell me a little bit about the reinforcements? I think you mentioned them earlier, but I know you had a lot of people planned to come in from other parts of the country. Is it going to help a little with time saving because the fact that the hurricane, once it got north of here, it kind of fell apart? I think there was concern that with Irma traveling north and being such a strong storm, maybe that could delay their arrival down here south. Will that help that Irma fell apart so quickly?
Well, actually, we pre-staged all of these workers, these nearly 18,000 men and women who are not only our staff and our contractors, but coming from 30 states around the country, as far north as Massachusetts and as far west as California. So they're already here, and they're already working to get the lights back on for our customers.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Bill Orlove with Florida Power and Light. I appreciate that update.
Thank you.
Many of the areas in southwest Florida that were hardest hit are places that have electrical coverage from Lee County Electrical Cooperative, places like Marco Island, Sanibel, and Pine Island. I talked with Karen Ryan. She's the public relations manager for LCEC earlier today. How do things stand today now that the sun is out and you've had a little time to assess?
Well, we are boots on the ground. We have 170,000 customers without power. So what happened, as soon as it was daybreak, our teams were ready to get out. They are out there assessing damage over our five-county service territory. And what that means is they are going to go out there. They're not going to make any repairs right away. They're going to see what they have ahead of us so that we can prioritize. Then what we will do is prioritize and get all of the essential services up. That's hospital, fire station, law enforcement. Any essential services, we'll make sure that they're up and running first. After that, we'll work on our main circuits, which those are the main arteries, so main roads where lots of stores, restaurants that can help people get back on their feet. And then once those are restored, we work on the feeders that go into the neighborhoods. And that's really how it works. There is a system to it. And sometimes it's challenging for customers because they may not see trucks in their neighborhood, but they can rest assured that we are out there and there is a method to the madness.
Yeah, I bet. Now, tell me real quick, what neighborhoods are we looking at? What areas were most harshly impacted by this?
The hardest hit areas were Marco Island, Immokalee, Everglades City, everybody in Lehigh Acres that LCEC serves is out of power. Most of North Fort Myers, but there are a few customers in North Fort Myers that do have power. There are a lot of customers in Cape Coral that have power, at least one-third of the customers there. But everybody on Pine Island and Sanibel, they are also out of power.
All of that's knocked out. And like you were saying, when they're doing these repairs, they're not going to be going door to door necessarily. They'll be working on maybe, I don't know if it's the correct terminology, but a grid for a given neighborhood.
That you're exactly right, Julie. And what happens is they have to start from the source. So they'll start at the substations, and then they'll follow those main circuits. If we went door to door, it wouldn't do any good because there's no power at the main source. So it wouldn't really do any good. And it would take much longer. We do have a lot of customers sending in their addresses and letting us know that their power's out. We do know it's out, but if we were running, you know, from one house here and one house there, it would be a much longer restoration process.
Exactly, because if there's no power getting to the end of your block, it's not going to make it to your house. So start at,
exactly.
At the first part. That makes sense. So, but it's good to let people know to not get discouraged if you don't see a truck sitting out on your roadway.
Yes, but rest assured, we're out there working on it. We do want people to contact us if it's a life. They can go to our website. If it's a life in danger, if there is a live wire on a car and somebody's inside of it, let us know, and we will work with emergency teams and get someone out there.
Those are the kind of emergencies that you'd probably first call 911, and the 911 would probably get a hold of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But and are there some electrical tips that we need to keep in mind as individuals are going back to their homes now if they were staying in shelters or if they had driven out of town, maybe they're driving back today. Are there things that they might need to know coming back to a house that does not have power or might have questionable power?
The first thing to know is don't move. I just had someone send me an email saying, you know, there's two trees at the end of my street that has a power line on it. I want to cut the trees down. And I said, no. When there is a line, you do not know if that line is energized. So don't try to move any power lines out of the way. Just rest assured that we're going to be out there and we're going to move those power lines for you. The other thing is, for people returning, if they don't have power and they're going to use a generator, don't connect their generator directly to the home's wiring at the breaker panel, because what that will cause is electricity to backfeed into the grid, and people working on the power lines would be in danger. And also, it could start a fire at their house, or it could hurt one of their neighbors. So make sure that they know how to use their generators and connect them properly. Also, don't use their generators in the house, and make sure they have the right cords and follow the manufacturer's instructions.
So those generators, yeah, don't keep them in the house or even in your garage. Apparently there's carbon monoxide issues, right?
Yes, that is true. And I know with Hurricane Charley, unfortunately, we did have some victims that had their generator in their garage, and that's still not far enough away.
Yeah, even in the garage. So it has to be outside.
Yes.
And I want to get back, because I don't want to put any of the electrical workers' lives on the line here, and be super clear about where to connect that generator to your home. You said don't do it between your on the outside of or beyond your breaker box, correct?
Correct.
Are there instructions to that tune in the in when you get, I don't have a generator, so would that kind of instruction material be in the box when you got your generator, or
yeah,
is there like a how-to online?
It will be, yes. You can. There's lots of them online, but you can also use the manufacturer's instructions, because some of them are different. So best thing to do is to use an outdoor rated power cord and follow those manufacturer instructions on how to plug the generator in properly.
Those are some important tips, and make sure to, well, if you don't have power, you might not have your internet, so maybe use your smartphone, charge it up in your car, and look up exactly how to put that generator together and hook it up to your house before you endanger yourself, your house, or the people that are trying to restore that power. Do you know if maybe later tonight or tomorrow we'll have a better idea of what the prognosis is for the amount of time that it'll take to get everything repaired?
Yes. Once our assessment team is in, we will have a much better idea, and we will also be able to identify the areas. For Marco Island, for instance, it's going to be weeks before power is restored on Marco Island because there was so much damage. I haven't gotten the assessment back, but just from what I've seen, it's probably going to be weeks. But once we get the assessments in for the other areas, we'll have a better idea of if it's going to be days, weeks. I don't think it's going to be months.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your time. Karen Ryan, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us about not only the electric, but then also being safe with our generators while we're waiting for that to come back into play. And I appreciate the planning and forethought that you told me about yesterday that went into getting ready for this storm.
And thanks, Julie, for keeping all of our listeners informed. It's a big help.
All right. Well, keep the information flowing to us, and we'll get it out there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Collier County bore the brunt of this storm as it made landfall, technically the second landfall on Marco Island after plowing through the Keys, which is being tagged as Irma's first landfall. But the rest of southern Collier County was also deeply impacted. We're joined now by Katie Albers, Collier County's Public Information Officer. Katie, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So Hurricane Irma made that second landfall on Marco Island at around 3:30 yesterday. What can you tell us about the situation on Marco now?
I can tell you there are cleanup efforts going on, damage assessment going on. Earlier this morning, we had closed the island to residents. The Jolly Bridge has since been reopened to residents, and so people are, you know, just now starting to get back home, get back to see what kind of damage they're facing.
So it's safe enough for people to get around there on the island?
Well, you know, I guess I would say it's the same as I would say for all of our for all of the places in Collier County, which is there's still a lot of debris on the road. There are still a lot of down power lines. There are still a lot of traffic signals out. We have crews working all over this county trying to clear roads, trying to make things safer for people to get around. If you are going to, you know, really, ideally, you probably just want to stay put for a while. But if you can't wait, you need to be careful. You need to yield to all the crews and the first responders that are out working, and you need to have some patience.
It's tough to keep people away from their homes when they're afraid that they have damage. They want to check it out and make sure it's okay. Do you have any reports of any injuries, or has anybody been hurt?
I personally do not have any reports of injuries. I can tell you this morning, when we first got here this morning, there were no reports of injuries or deaths. That's not to say that there couldn't be some, but right now I don't have any reports.
Okay. And I wanted to ask also about Everglades City, a little bit further to the south. Have we had any reports about what's happened down there? Or Chokoloskee?
Obviously it is one of our concerns because it did receive some storm surge, and we know that there is damage down there. Exactly what's happening, I'm not sure.
I think are we still just assessing things?
That's where we are right now. We're in, total assessment mode, trying to assess all the damage, trying to figure out, how many structures are collapsed, what we're going to need in terms of, if it needs to happen temporary housing for people, things like that. So, we're doing our best to just assess the situation and see what's going on. Unfortunately, Irma hit later in the day, so our crews weren't really able to get out until first light this morning to start doing that work.
Yeah, those dangerous winds didn't die down until after dark, so it would be hard to see much of anything.
Right.
And we're less than 24 hours out, so we'll still wait to see what's coming. And I know we were really nervous about that storm surge. Was there a point last night or yesterday late afternoon when it became clear that that storm surge was not going to be as bad as predicted?
To be honest, I apologize. I was kind of kept out of the loop of that. We got periodic reports from the weather service. So, the fact that it was less is wonderful news. But, it's sort of one of those things that, when it comes, it's good news. You just hope that people heeded our warnings, and when the winds died down, they weren't like, oh, hey, let's go home. It'll be fine when they lived in those areas.
Yeah, it was a dangerous time. But from what we hear so far, we don't have any reports of death or injuries. So that thus far we will take as good news, and we'll be checking back with you later in the day. Thanks so much, Katie Albers.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We are talking about Hurricane Irma on today's show. Give us a call and tell us your storm story at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Share your storm pictures with us also on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCO. As day broke this morning, people stumbled into the sunlight from shelters all across Southwest Florida. Thousands of people sought refuge at Germain Arena in Estero. Jessica Mazaros was there as people waded through the newly formed pond in the parking lot to try to get their cars to start so they could go home.
Adrienne Vanderhayden. Are you from Fort Myers?
Cape Coral.
And when did you decide to evacuate?
Actually, yesterday morning, we woke up and realized it was getting really bad. So about 9 a.m., we packed our stuff and headed here.
What was really bad? What would a Cape Coral look like?
The storm surge. We live in Southwest Cape, and they expected 15 feet of water. So we knew we were in a mandatory evacuation.
And what do you think your house looks like by the time you get home?
I'm praying to God that it was spared. I've been in contact with some people, and they said Cape didn't get hit as bad. So I'm believing that we're going to go back to a miracle house.
And you stayed at the Germain Arena. What was it like waiting out the hurricane here?
Well, the line was horrendous. We got here at 10:05. The doors opened at 10. We were here for 6 hours to get into the door. I was told 8,500 people are in here. And during the middle of the hurricane, the roof started pouring with water.
Really? Portions of it or everywhere?
Multiple places. So everybody had to pick up their stuff, try to find somewhere else to go in the midst of the chaos.
How many people did this affect?
It was probably hundreds of people were getting rained on. People had umbrellas in the middle of the shelter.
And how did that get fixed, if at all?
It didn't get fixed. They just put buckets out, mopped the floor, and we all laid back down after the hurricane, stopped. The rain continued. It was about 1 a.m. in the morning, and flood started, and it started to leak again. People had to get up in the middle of the night, so we were pretty much up all night long.
Are you excited to go home?
Yes.
Can I just have your name and spell it, please?
Cook.
Are you from Fort Myers?
No, I'm Naples.
You're from Naples?
Yeah, but they were all filled up. They had no places to go to, so.
When did you get here?
Friday.
Friday morning.
And at what point did you decide to evacuate?
Right at the end, Friday morning, about 6 o'clock. They were talking about it was going to be flooding up there where I live. I live in a flood zone, and there wasn't any places up there open. They had them all filled up, and they were sending them somewhere else. And so I wound up coming here,
So you're going to go home now?
Well, I'm going to attempt.
Yeah, what are we looking at ahead of us?
It looked like a lot of water.
Mary Schaefer.
What was it like staying here last night during the hurricane?
It wasn't that bad, really. It was crowded, but not too crowded. The bathrooms were good, and they fed us some hot dogs and hamburgers and things, and everybody was really polite, so I thought it was going to be awful, but it wasn't.
How many people do you think, how many evacuees stayed there?
I heard 5,000.
And I heard that at some point the roof leaked. Did you experience
that? Two or three places.
People
had to move their beds to the side.
And you weren't affected by that?
Well, I didn't get there early enough to get a bed. So,
where did you stay?
I was up in the stands. I had one of the hard seats.
Oh, wow. At what point did you decide to evacuate and come here?
I got a message on my cell phone that said the evacuation was mandatory, so that's when I decided.
Where do you live?
I live in Bel Lago.
Where is that?
On Estero Parkway in Estero.
How do you think, what do you think you're going home to today?
Oh, I don't know. It doesn't look all that bad, does it?
No.
But when it rained here before for 4 days in a row, it was flooded. It was halfway up my driveway, so I just have my fingers crossed.
And so now, it was how long did you have to wait in line to get in here?
I came late, so, not more than 30 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Got lucky again.
All right, well, good luck getting through this. Can you tell people who can't see what we're looking at straight ahead?
Well, the road is all flooded. It looks like it's about knee high, would you say? Yeah, so I wouldn't take my car in there.
So what do you think your plan is?
I'm just going to wait till maybe another hour. Maybe it'll go down a little, and then I'll go out over by the arena.
Thank you so much for your time. Good
okay.
luck.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
You just heard the voices of Adrienne Vander Hayden, Gary Cook, and Mary Schaefer, evacuees from Hurricane Irma in southwest Florida, speaking with WGCU's Jessica Mazaros this morning in front of the Germain Arena shelter as they try to get back home. If you were listening to WGCU's nonstop coverage of the storm as it made landfall yesterday, you may have heard WGCU's Quincy Walters reporting live from the Lee County Emergency Operations Center all day and night. He's just returned from the most recent news briefing there. Quincy, good to see you in person again.
Oh, likewise, Julie.
So what did Lee County have to say in their most recent statement?
Their most urgent message is that people should stay off of the roads until they have the all clear. The disaster assessment started slightly before noon. Actually, as I was leaving the Lee County Emergency Operations Center, I got to see the Lee County Sheriff's helicopter take off from the parking lot, which was pretty neat.
Were they able yet to find out anything about storm surge numbers? Because I know we were really worried about that. I didn't know how high it actually got. Have they gotten any confirmation on that?
They don't have any exact numbers. They do say that the good news is that the storm surge that they were saying 10 to 15 feet doesn't appear to have happened in Lee County. They say with these things, you have to give people the worst possible numbers that have been calculated, because if they don't and something catastrophic happens and no one knows, that would be a terrible situation. So it's one of those kind of situations where you have to prepare for the worst and hope for the best.
Yeah. Have they been able to Henry County, they've already announced that they're going to close some of their hurricane shelters. Are there any plans to close the Lee County shelters at this point, or are they leaving some of them open?
No. Last I heard this morning is that the shelters will remain open because that all clear hasn't been given yet for people to go visit their homes. But when that all clear is given and people find that their homes are inhabitable, they are prepared to have those shelters opened for those people.
And we just heard earlier that the bridge to get over to Marco Island is functioning. It's been inspected and it's fine, and people are able to go on to Marco Island. I understand that they've looked at the Sanibel Causeway and they're saying that it is sound. Are people from Sanibel able to get out to the island yet, or are they just emergency crews?
Right. So the last briefing was this morning, and at last check, the Florida Department of Transportation determined that the Sanibel Causeway was structurally sound, but the city of Sanibel was not letting residents on the causeway. They were only allowing first responders there.
Maybe too dangerous. They want to make sure there aren't any lines out in the roads.
I nobody knows what their reasoning is.
Just to probably keep people safe, I would imagine. So I know that you had to sleep on the floor with your cardigan for a couple nights.
Right.
So it may be a little too soon to look back philosophically, but I wanted to ask you, what's it like being in the center of a storm like that with a group of journalists at an emergency command center?
I think it was mentioned the other day that it was our tight quarters were like a sleepaway camp that we named Camp Irma. It's good because people kind of have no choice but to work together. There's no competition there. Everyone's sort of helping each other out if they need batteries or if they need someone to frame the camera for them. Someone was always in there to help out.
Quite an experience. Well, thank you, Quincy. Great work this weekend.
No problem, Julie. You too.
Coming up, FGCU is closed and some ponds appear to have moved into parking lots. The university's Alico Arena hosted hundreds of evacuees under the safety and security of FGCU's police department. We'll talk with Chief Stephen Moore next. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. We are talking about Hurricane Irma on today's show. If you want to call and tell us your storm story, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can share your storm pictures also at Facebook. We're on WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So I am sitting here across the table from someone who I just sat across the table from on Friday. It was just Friday that we were sitting here, and FGCU Police Chief Stephen Moore told me that Alico Arena is not open as a hurricane shelter, and we talked about what people should expect should it open, and that did become necessary. So FGCU Police Chief Stephen Moore, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Have you been able to do an assessment of FGCU so far?
Yes, we've been we sent officers back out just after midnight, actually, and then got several university administrators together this morning and did a tour of the campus to see the various damage around campus.
How did we fare?
It's not too bad. All things considered, there's no major structural damage. You have some a lot of trees down and standing water, but the water's starting to recede slowly. Some minor damage to buildings, more cosmetic type of things on buildings, some water intrusion, those kind of things, but nothing major. But it's going to take a day or two just to even remotely clean up the campus.
Yeah. Did we ever have to evacuate students?
The students who stayed on campus because
– And there weren't that many last we talked.
There were – it ended up being about 200. The students who were here on campus, since Alico Arena became a shelter, the students actually went to Eagle Hall, which is one of our residence halls in South Village. It has a generator. So they stayed in the community rooms there in Eagle Hall, and it sounded like they had a great couple days.
Ended up making it fun. The hurricane party is what we hear about.
Yep.
So how many people ended up ultimately staying at Alico Arena?
Well, it was our first time, I think, of having pets in there also. So that was an unusual occurrence. But there ended up being about just over 1,400 people in the arena.
1,400 people. I wonder how many pets.
We didn't count, but we were thinking it was in the hundreds easily.
Did that contribute to any oddness? I mean, because there's not restrooms really in Alico Arena for pets.
Oh, no, and that does create a problem. It was creating a problem before they had to go sort of to lockdown when the storm got here. And then obviously this was a slow enough storm and big enough storm that you were locked in for 24 hours. So obviously there's a lot of cleaning to do in the arena.
There's a lot of cleaning to do. I'm sure the owners were grateful enough to be good and clean up after their animals, I would hope.
Yeah, some were.
I have some faith in humanity left, I guess, I suppose. So did that end up filling to capacity? Did you have to turn people away?
What we did is we then opened Lutgert Hall as an overflow facility, and that got up to about 125 people in Lutgert Hall.
Were you able to talk to any of the people that were coming? I mean, how far away did they come from?
Well, most of them were Lee County residents, but then we also had a special group that arrived from Charlotte County. We had a nursing facility in Charlotte County or Port Charlotte that had put in a request to the state for an emergency assistance, and FGCU answered that call. So we ended up with 100 residents from a nursing facility, and we're hoping for their buses to arrive any minute now to take them back to Port Charlotte.
Oh, I bet they're ready to get back.
Yeah.
When you're in a nursing facility, you just want to be in the comfort of where you're used to being, too.
But that's a trying time, and it's a hard atmosphere for the staff that came with them also. Fortunately, they were completely self-sufficient. They were put in Marib Hall, but that is not an ideal situation. But that was a refuge of last resort for them.
Yeah, it's got to feel good, though, to be able to be a partner in the community and be able to provide that kind of support for people who need to get out of where they're at.
Well, there were several instances of that, including, again, helping this nursing home. While all the evacuees were entering the arena on Saturday, we had a lady go into full cardiac arrest, and two officers were able to do CPR and use the AED and bring her back. So those are the kind of incidents that, that's why you're in this job.
Yeah, you get to save a life.
Yep.
How about that? We do have a call coming in from Barbara who would like to share her story. Barbara, what did you see?
Well, we were out off of the south of Daniels, off of Fiddlesticks Boulevard, in a safe home with impact windows. So we could watch this wind just work right through the trees, and got pretty scary and intense, but watched some big limbs out of oak trees come down. But I've been here since 1975 and in Florida since 68, and this was my first kind of ground zero experience. But we had I live in the Whiskey Creek area and had come out to my friends because so much of the talk was, it's storm surge and I was in an evacuation zone. But we actually, I think, ended up experiencing a little more intense wind because the storm, I guess, came up on the east side of I-75. But
have you gotten back to your house in Whiskey Creek yet?
We did. That was kind of scary, too, because, of course, there's no traffic lights out. So if you don't have to go check on something, I would tell people don't, because we watch people not obey the four-way stop rule and just buzz through intersections. So it was kind of nail-biting. We did. The condo was, other than massive tree limbs down, I live in a neighborhood with these tons of big, tall trees, and driveway was blocked, but no damage to any of the homes, and neighbors that had ridden it out were okay, and I was really grateful that they were safe. But I've been here since 75, and I miss Charlie because I was staying with my mom in Maine for a week, but my family didn't, and they had had some trees come down then. But I'm out at Legends now, and a lot of folks have lost some pool cages. Screens ripped out, and there is some of the streets are flooded and signs down and light
poles
down.
I've heard that the pool cages did not fare very well during this one. Hey, I want to thank you, Barbara. Thank you for sharing your story.
That's minor.
I appreciate your story. Thanks so much. And at least so far we're all safe, and we haven't heard any reports of any real serious injuries or death from either of the counties that we've checked in so far. So that's also good news. And Chief Moore, your guys got to save a life. I wanted to ask you a little bit about what the mood was like in Alico Arena. Were people fairly patient? Were there I mean, there's always going to be the one person that's a little tough to deal with. But I mean, were people generally a bit of camaraderie there?
Sure. I think, you know, for the most part, it's a tough situation and people come together. But, yeah, there's just a lot going on, a lot of activity. I was out there at 2-3 in the morning and you just see people, you know, getting up, walking around. So it's just people sleeping on stairways, all sorts of different things. It's sort of a strange environment. But at the same time, you know, people come together. The officers stay very busy. We had, you know, 24-hour security out there with several officers. And there were, I would say we averaged probably 10 medical calls a day out there. So there's,
wow, 10 medical calls.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of people who came who should have been in special needs shelters and they weren't. They were at this facility.
But yeah, again, you have to pre-register for that. And a lot of people waited and didn't
but
do
then,
that.
But then you end up with the special needs people at a regular shelter, which doesn't have the medical equipment. Fortunately, we had EMTs from San Carlos Fire and we had Lee EMS there. They kept very busy, and people just with normal medical issues, diabetic issues, blood pressure issues, but there were just all sorts of incidents all day long, from start to finish.
So FGCU and many other schools and businesses are still closed today, anticipating cleanup after Irma. And when right now is FGCU scheduled to be reopened and letting people back on campus?
Well, right now the game plan is for Monday, a week from now. What we're doing is we've canceled classes and suspended normal business operations. Some of the housing residents are starting to filter back into housing. We do have one housing complex that does not have power. That's off campus at Westlake Village. But here on campus, North Lake Village and South Village have power. And housing's asking residents to wait until tomorrow to return if they possibly can. But, they're trying to get the residents back in because we do have 5,000 residents that do call the university home.
Yeah, it is home, so they had to evacuate. Yeah, so we're looking at Monday.
Monday for starting classes and normal business operations.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Chief Stephen Moore with FGCU's Police Department. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
It was said many times, we are hoping for the best but prepared for the worst. Authorities across the state repeated that mantra in the week leading up to Hurricane Irma. What we got just may have been the best possible outcome for major population centers. Here to go over the plodding path of this storm is meteorologist Jeff Huffman from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. These are the people who were on the radio with us all day yesterday, providing up-to-the-minute reports on the movements of this storm. Jeff, to say we got the best outcome may sound strange for coming from the corner of the state that took a direct hit, but we were really terrified about that huge storm surge, and that didn't happen.
Rightfully so that you were terrified, Julie, and I know it can sound insensitive to those who did experience the worst of Irma, but this is this is example A of how the worst can happen. We were talking about, I think it was two nights before landfall, that there was a shift to the west, and really the model data didn't really come in to suggest that with a credible amount of certainty until late that night. And I remember a Facebook Live we did very late in the wee hours of the morning, I forget which morning that was, where we were telling people the worst is at play for Fort Myers. The worst was a possibility for Tampa if the storm would have stayed just offshore and stayed a Category 3, 4, or 5 all the way up the coast. That could have been a catastrophe. Now, we're certainly looking at a lot of heartache and a lot of devastation and a lot of listeners who have to rebuild their lives, but there's also millions of people thankful that it stayed a little further to the east.
It was really touch and go there for a while. But as soon as we saw it coming, it went kind of inland a little bit to the east of Naples. And we had a reporter where the eye passed right over her. She was sitting there and the sun came out while she was on the air.
Wow, that's truly remarkable. And in a very weird meteorological way, I'm a little jealous she got to experience that. that's just a marvel of science, you know?
It's really amazing. And the difference that it made in the storm surge predictions, by the time we were getting ready to go off the air, we were talking to Charlotte County to the north of us, and they said that their storm surge predictions had gone from 12 feet at maximum to 3. I mean, that's a big difference.
It's all about the wind direction, and because of where Irma made landfall and then continued to move, the wind was mostly out of the north, which, considering the coastline in southwest Florida and how it kind of goes from northwest to southeast, that's an offshore flow, and that's what made the difference.
And we had a lot of people here that were posting photos of looking out to the piers, out onto the beaches, and there was no water left. I mean, the water just got sucked straight off the beach.
That's one of those things that you post-storm you just think about, wow, that did happen. The water was moving in the other direction about with the same velocity as it was on the other side of the storm, which would have caused the life-threatening storm surge.
That's what would have been the big problem for us here. So we had that happen, and then we also have people wondering, are we in the clear? I mean, we've been so nervous for a week. Are we done? Is it possible for any kind of surge to come at this point?
Well, keep in mind that right now we still have this southwest, this very broad southwest flow. So the recession of the water, whatever storm surge is still left, it will take some time to get back to normal. But yes, we're done with any significant other hazards from this hurricane, including the wind and the rain and the tornado threat. That's all gone. And I'm pleased to report the Atlantic Basin is going to calm down for the next week to 10 days. We have Jose now that's still out there, but not a threat to Florida. But I don't see any other immediate threats probably for the next 10 days. So we're okay for the next 10, Julie, but we're only about halfway through hurricane season. Let's remember that October can still be a very busy month.
Yeah, and a nice reminder to people that it takes 30 days to get flood insurance. So if you have been scared into it, this is the time to get it before the next one churns up.
Absolutely.
How does this bode for the future? I mean, this is the biggest hurricane. Do you think we'll see more hurricanes this big or bigger in the future?
Well, it can certainly happen. I think that's another big lesson from Irma, is that it was a historic storm in its size and strength and stamina, if you will, all the way across the Atlantic. It just so happened Florida was its target. And not only that, Florida's skinniest part, its southern tip there, was its target. So we have to remember that we always prepare for the worst case. In this particular case, Irma could have been a whole lot worse. But it just reminds us that this is why we prepare for months leading up to the hurricane season.
Okay, thanks so much, Jeff.
All right, thanks a lot.
That was meteorologist Jeff Huffman from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. And while we were talking, we mentioned the reporter who sat under the eye of that hurricane as it passed over. That was reporter Rachel Iacovone. She was covering the storm from the Collier County Emergency Operations Center for us, and we got a chance to sit down and talk earlier today. Rachel, you were down at the Collier County Emergency Operations Center for two nights.
Yeah, so we stayed, started as soon as the tropical storm force winds began. We kind of hunkered down and then stayed there throughout. And once we got the all clear, everyone cleared out immediately, tried to get out there, get their live shots and whatnot.
Now, this isn't your first trip to the rodeo, so to speak, but the first hurricane that you experienced was Wilma. How old were you then?
So, gosh, that was 10 years ago. I must have been 11. Yeah, 10, 11. And at the time, you know, I still live out in the urban estates area of Naples. And so that area is really prone to flooding, you know, to tree falling. And we, at the time, were doing a remodel on our home. And so we had two sections of the roof. And so when the winds came, it kind of ripped both from the center. And the roof is off. And I'm sitting in my closet with an emergency radio tuned into WGCU. And I was listening to our news director now, you know, Amy Tardiff. And she was then, too, on air for, gosh, you know, she said 13 hours now. But I must listen to her for probably like 8 before I finally stopped shaking in my closet and thinking I was going to die. And here I am on the other end of it and reporting a hurricane for us.
And so you were there at the Emergency Operations Center in Collier County as the eye went over and happened to also be on the air. Tell me what that experience was like.
That was just, you know, as you called it, broadcast gold later. It was by chance, you know, you call me and I'm looking at this terrible darkness, and it's the worst of the storm. The gusts are terrible. I'm sure this palm tree is going to fall on my car. I'm watching it right then as we're talking. And then suddenly the wind stops and it's just this calm, and suddenly it's light. And then the sun breaks through. And I remember in the middle of a sentence saying to you, I can see the sun. You know, it just, this beams of light come through, and it's like, it was a spring shower. You have no idea we're in the center of a hurricane that was supposed to be a category 6, people were calling it.
And then later, you were able to go up into the roof area while the eye was passing over.
Yeah, so I stepped out there because a lot of the TV reporters have been doing some live shots out there. So I thought, hey, if they've been doing it, maybe I can now too. They were obviously encouraging us not to step out there during the actual storm. And when I got out there, it was just kind of, you know, the smell of rain, and it just smelled like rain. You could tell there had been a storm there, but looking out, it's so bright and breezy out. It just felt like spring, totally different.
That had to be the weirdest experience. And so you're looking over this area, and now you see standing water, correct?
Right. So when I was talking to you earlier, during like kind of the eye wall, we got that north side of the eye wall and it was the worst gusts and the worst rain. And it was kind of this angled rain coming in like bullets for a while that filled this like low lying pond area. And it wasn't a pond before, I should say, between the library that's there and then the EOC that I was at. And so I was on the third floor watching this fill with water and everyone was scared about flooding. But we were more concerned if it sucked up that water and came back as a storm. Storm surge, it would be even worse. We're anticipating about 10 to 15 feet of water. Thankfully, we didn't get either, but we did watch the pond during that eye. It just kind of dried back up. We were saying, well, if that water got sucked up, it went somewhere.
That's so weird watching how the water moves around and then being able to see it in person. And then having that experience of kind of deja vu. You were listening to it 10 years ago and then you were broadcasting it again on the radio.
Right. And it gave me a whole new appreciation for everyone on the other side. Obviously, I was thankful for those updates then. But now I'm thinking I'm experiencing it, you know, as someone who's going through the storm still. I forget that the disembodied voice of radio is someone who's also experiencing it. Someone who has a home and a family that they're worried about as well. But being there and kind of in a safe spot where I could see through the window, that was always the scary part to me, was just hearing all the noise and not knowing what's going on outside your house. And this time I could watch and then kind of just wait as we all were.
Oh, that sound you got sounded like it was sound effects from Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, that's how I was explaining it to you, because it just reminded me of that tornado track they played. Like, this can't be real. Ridiculous.
That doesn't even sound realistic. And yet, there it was.
Right. And that was pretty soon into it. That was only the tropical storm force winds that I recorded for you.
So then what did you do after you were able to get out of the emergency operations center and they gave you the all clear to go?
So when I got out, it was this morning at about like 6 was the curfew clear. And then I step out about 7. And at the time, it was all the emergency personnel kind of gathered in the front. So it was a bunch of sheriff's deputies in this huddle. And they spotted me and I still had the press pass on. So they kind of got quieter. But they were giving their different, you know, plans for what areas of Naples to hit first. And there's a lot of discussion about Ave Maria, which is still technically part of Naples in that was at risk of being underwater. We got a lot of reports when we were there, no confirmation. And Everglades City was a main concern. They said there was no clear pathway there. I managed to overhear that. But then they kind of dispersed and all got in their cruisers as I was leaving as well and kind of just followed them out.
How was it getting information from the emergency authorities down in Collier County? We got a lot of reports in Lee County with Quincy. They came and gave kind of regular press briefings, but we didn't hear a whole lot from emergency personnel down there. Do you think that could be because the storm was maybe more intense when it hit Collier County than it did when it hit Lee? But even leading up to its arrival, we weren't hearing a lot.
I think I'd like to think it was really the storm that did it. It was, like you were saying, because it was intense, but also just so unpredictable. Like, I got the report of 10 to 15 feet of water and perhaps our cars and the lot were going to float away and then quickly turned to maybe 2 feet and ended up being no feet. So it was just so up in the air that I think they were scrambling to figure out what exactly to tell us because, you know, we're the voice for everyone back at home. They don't want the wrong information getting to people and cause a panic.
Yeah, that's true. They don't want to come out and say, oh, we're only looking at 2 feet now, and then they were off. Because that changed pretty quickly when the direction of the hurricane went more over land.
Yeah, look at Marco Island. We're getting reports of 5 feet of water, some areas up to stop sign height. And of course, that area had been evacuated, but we were in Lely Resort, and we thought that was going to be the worst of it, not Marco, who seemed to kind of get the brunt of the back of the storm.
Yeah, it was really interesting watching things progress and then seeing how reporting is. And talk about a quick fire to get out in there. You just got out of college recently and you're out there reporting on pretty important, serious stuff. And I got to say, I think you did a great job.
Thank you, Julie.
That was Rachel Iacovone, who works with WGCU. She covered the storm for us from the Collier County Emergency Operations Center and had the unique experience of being underneath the eye and on the air right when the sun shone through. We encourage you to continue to share your storm stories and pictures with us via Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. We're also on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. Our reporters are also filing pictures there, so be sure to check it out for some visual storytelling as well. We will have more storm stories coming from our team today on All Things Considered with Jessica Mazzaro starting at 4 until 6 o'clock. Our show today was produced by John Davis, Jessica Mazzaros, and Matthew Smith. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.